Well, good afternoon. Fortunate to be here and fortunate to speak about my favorite crop, maize. So the curator, Mark Miller, and I are doing this presentation jointly. We were asked to discuss how the maize collection has been leveraged, and that begs a few questions. What does leverage mean? Is that better?
Yes.
Thank you. Sorry. Well, for our purposes today, leverage is going to be utilization of the collection to advance either genetic resource conservation or for basic and applied research applications. And leverage by whom? We have a very large clientele. The curator, the curation team themselves, public and private sector researchers, educators, and what we call citizen scientists, lay people who are interested in the collection for various applications. So I'm going to describe the collection in terms of what it is, the level of demand, and then some of the purposes for which it has been used. And this beautiful image is a variety known as kudu, also known as the sacred eagle corn. And the shapes on the crowns of the kernels are thought to be birds, eagles, but they also represent transposable elements, which is one of the reasons that maize is one of the most diverse crops in the world and has evolved to adapt to so many different areas for so many different purposes. This slide illustrates collection growth over the last 15 years. It started at a little under 18,000 and now is about 20,517 accessions. This line is numbers. This line is available accessions. So you see, we barely kept pace in availability with collection growth over this period, and that is a challenge. In terms of composition, 83% of the collection is made up of populations. These may be land races, they may be synthetics. Some of them are tropical, some of them are temperate. Increasing the tropicals are a challenge. All inbreds make up about close to 15% of the collection. And within the inbreds, we have public inbreds, we have expired plant variety protected lines, we have the gem releases. When breeders retire, we try to use the Maize Crop Germplasm Committee to advise us on resources that we should seek to incorporate into the collection. And we have varying success on that. Used to be this germplasm flowed fairly freely from the universities and the public institutions. And now there's a lot of factors that go into whether or not they want to incorporate it into the system if we're fortunate enough that nobody dumped out the cold room the day they left, okay? We also have the Tia Sintes, the ancestors of maize. We have 439 accessions of those. They are very difficult to regenerate, require some specialized conditions. And then we have more primitive races, the Coikes and the Tripsicum. In the GRIN database, soon to be the GRIN Global database, we have a lot of standard descriptors of these various categories. The morphological, phenological are probably the most heavily populated. Taxonomic is well populated. And then the uncategorized descriptors would be digital images and coarse subset identification. And this is an example of the morphological descriptors that are contained in the database. We have colors of various seed composition fractions, the alurone, the endosperms, silk scar color, cob color, husk length, kernel color, various descriptors for the ears themselves, the kernels themselves, the total number of nodes in the plant, the nodes above the ear. That's a very important selection factor for people, especially if they're interested in growing it at a temperate latitude and it originated from a tropical latitude. Those things change. Root stocks, tiller numbers, those are all important. In terms of the phenology descriptors, it's pretty much focused on various ways to measure maturity, GDUs for shed and silk at various latitudes, days, kernel weight, heterotic pattern, and the heterotic pattern information is being we're getting more data on that, and the database is increasingly populated. So this is a poster that resides in the maize processing lab, where we have a lot of student labor, and they are well supervised, but they are the ones who help capture the data every time a seed lot is processed, and every data point that goes into GRIN should be accurate. So there are various guidelines for them to look at when they are making characterization decisions. And if it's a toss-up, well, they talk to the curator. So now I'd like to talk about the demand for our resources. At the plant introduction station, we do not maintain the genetic stocks. Those are maintained by the Maize Genetic Stock Center in Champaign-Urbana. We have the populations, the inbreds, the non-genetic stocks. But every year, we distribute 40 to 50,000 packets of seed from the Ames station alone. That's about 16% of the distributions for the entire MPGS in a given year. And about half of those that come out of Ames are maize, which is comparable to the ratio of maize in our holdings. We also funnel germplasm into a utilization program, the Germplasm Enhancement of Maize Project, known as GEM, and I'll talk about that a little later. It was designed to utilize exotic germplasm and capture some of its diversity into temperate backgrounds. So we recently published an article with our colleagues at Pioneer and Monsanto, Global Access to Maize Germplasm Provided by the U.S. National Plant Germplasm System and U.S. Breeders. And the next three slides are taken from this. I don't think it's up online yet, but it's accepted. And these are the codes that you're going to see on the slides. So we've divided it into foreign versus U.S. And within foreign, we have companies, gene banks, individuals, and then non-commercial organizations, NGOs. And then we also have the CGIAR centers separated. And within the U.S., we have various government agencies, U.S. private sector, non-ARS or USAID agencies, individuals, and nonprofits. So when we look at this graph, the light blue lines are the total distribution of maize. The darker blue lines are expired PVPs. So about half of the maize distributions being requested are expired PVP lines. This reflects the demand for sources of elite adapted material for breeding programs around the world. Every day, we are asked to help select resources to meet certain research objectives, and given a choice between an unadapted line and an XPVP that something is known about, the choice is pretty easy for a researcher to fulfill their objectives. So the foreign distributions to the private sector, commercials are over here. You see XPVPs are a little greater than all other maize. Within the U.S., the public sector PVP is a little less than all other maize. U.S. commercial sector, it's about equal. USARS, fewer PVPs, more other. If we look over time, how distributions from the station have tracked, basically it increases. This is from 1987 to 2015. Total ZIA and international total ZIA track very closely, as do off PVP totals and internationals. And then if we look at just the demand for these expired PVPs, the only thing holding back these numbers is the availability as they roll off PVP protection. And there was a gap in the plant examiner's office for a while, and that reflected fewer PVPs being granted for about a 5-year period. There's going to be a whole raft of them coming out over the next 3 years. Probably about 250 total PVPs will roll off in the next 3 years. And then we will see these numbers jump again. So how do we leverage it in terms of conservation? So in 2010 and 2011, the Buckler Lab and various scientists and postdoc Santa Rome phenotyped and genotyped 2,500 maize inbreds, primarily made up of those available from the collection in Ames. They interrogated it using GBS technology, used over 680,000 SNP markers, and they identified, they established identity by sequence relationships. And this data set has proven very useful for examining the relationships between the lines based on similarity or divergence, where if they're completely identical, they have a score of 1, and complete divergence would be 1 minus similarity. So Mark took this huge matrix, and he transformed it into a queryable SQL database with millions of records, and developed the query tools to look at this. And because it's useful in various ways, Maize GDB thought that it would be good to offer it on their site. So collaboratively, we deployed it there. And anyone can use this tool, this TypeSim selector, to sort and compare identity by sequence values. If you go to Maize GDB, get my cursor here, you can choose between the curation data set or the breeding data set. And then you're going to select your line of interest, and you're going to choose whether you want to see them by similarity or by dissimilarity. And for these, I selected two. These represent this inbred and a variation of this inbred. And what you'll see is the similarity score is about 0.86, okay? This is informative to the curator. If these were two seed lots of the same line, we would understand that something has changed. If it's a back cross version, we know something has changed. We may be interested in what that something is. If I want to look at B73 versus an expired PVP line with some B73 in its heritage, I can do that as well, and I get a similarity score of 0.87. These are just some examples of how the curator has used it. He's very interested in using the GBS data itself to pinpoint SNPs that have changed, because our mission is to preserve the original genetic profile as it was received. And genetic drift happens. Our methods are designed to preclude that, but we need to understand it. So I think I've already said this. So the second way is directly in the development of a gene bank information management system that will meet the workflow and information needs the curator requires to fulfill his mission. Because of the wide array of attributes and the wide array of geographic origins, and accessions come to us in multiple ways, and they may have different names but actually be the same accession depending on where they came from. And so the use of multiple identifiers and all the trait data, and Mark calls it his 1,000-year plan, we call it the TYP, and so the GRIN Global system was designed to offer the curator, the curatorial community, the flexibility to manage data but also workflows. And Mark has served as the business analyst on this project. Shifting to how it's been utilized by the public and the private sector researchers, they use it for a wide variety of purposes: breeding, genetics, developing new genetic resources, the NSF grants that have been devoted toward analyzing and understanding diversity, Jeff Ross Barra's work out of California, and understanding ancestry of maize and its derivation from Parvaglumus versus Mexicana species. Sometimes I think we would be better off if we could save tissue and deliver tissue to people who want to do genomic studies because they don't need seeds. But we're not equipped to do that. So we give them seeds, they grow their tissues, they do their studies. Archaeobotany purposes are always interesting. And then we've repatriated seed to many organizations that have lost their collections, to many institutions. I've got a few examples of some of the research, important research within just the last few years on uses of this maize collection that further our understanding of how to use it to improve food production. So we start with the Buckler-Romay project on the genotyping of the collection, which was published in early 2013. We look at the development of the bulk segregate analysis tools. This was published by the Schnabel Lab. And this method now has been utilized in many studies to understand trait associations between specific traits of interest in the germplasm of origin that can deliver those traits of interest. And in doing so, and in having that database available on Maize GDB, we can further mine the collection. Recently, using the same data set, the collaborators published a paper on genetic architecture of maize height. And this, I screwed up. This is a different citation. Basically, some authors in common with this one, where they looked at a GWAS analysis for fusarium ear rot resistance in a panel of 1,600 diverse lines. And basically, they found the allele frequencies of those SNPs associated with fusarium ear rot resistance were higher in tropical maize than temperate dense maize. That's no surprise. These will provide targets for candidate gene investigations to better understand the pathways involved in this in resistance to fusarium ear rot. Most recently, PhD student Jordan Pace, which Dr. Thomas Luberstadt and I share, he used them to look at seedling root traits, seedling root development traits, and he was very interested in narrowly focusing it to a subset of temperate lines, because these were also going to go into field trials where some of these trait associations would be validated. So he identified several significant SNP markers for some of these root seedling traits that are also localized within regions of previously identified root quantitative trait loci. These could be targets for breeders for marker-assisted selection of seedling root traits. And we'd like to know how some of these seedling root traits correlate with mature performance traits related to root strength, if they do at all. Shifting gears, I want to talk a little bit about how the GEM project has utilized the collections. GEM basically started in 1993 with a congressional allocation for this project, with the mission is to increase the genetic diversity of commercial maize in the U.S. and now more globally. There's two components to this program, one in Ames, Iowa, where we look at 25% tropical integrations, and the other one in Raleigh, North Carolina, which focuses on 50% tropicals. It's truly a private-public sector collaboration. There's 63 entities that have participated at various times. About 42 are active at the moment. The private sector has shared germplasm to incorporate. They've provided in-kind support in the manner of yield trials, disease pest resistance screening, various forms of nursery activity support. And if you go to the GEM website, you'll see that the participants have released about 270 lines to date. And 2 years after release, those are incorporated into the maize collection, and then they are available truly publicly. We have another project within GEM called the Allelic Diversity Project. And our technical steering group suggested that by agronomically filtering performance, only releasing lines that go through the yield and agronomic filter, we were narrowing the ability to mine non-related agronomic traits. And so our goal was to develop inbred lines that capture the diversity of exotic maize resources in an adapted temperate format, but without agronomic filtering. And to develop, on average, 5 lines from each of the 300-some races of maize, and 250, 300, depending on who you talk to, how many races of maize there are. So we settled on 2 XPVP lines to use as the recurrent parents, PHB47 and PHZ51. And we did this jointly with the Luberstadt Lab and Iowa State University's double haploid facility. And in January of 2014, we released our first set of lines. How am I doing on time? Thank you. And those lines are truly publicly available. They've been through disease screens of various kinds this summer. That data will go on the GEM website and eventually on MAIZE-GDB also. They've been top crossed. They've been yield trialed. They have gone through genotype by sequencing through the Buckler Lab. They've had the KWS in Germany ran a 2200K SNP chip on them. And all that genome data will eventually be publicly available as soon as a couple PhD projects are published. These are images of some of the double haploid lines that we have released. I think that image is too small to read the tags, but this one, I believe, is from Mexico. This one came from the Sonora region of Mexico. This one came from Bolivia, and this one came from Peru. So we're capturing in a double haploid format genetic resources that are going to feed into other investigations. Lastly, I'll just speak briefly to utilization by the public. Generally, we do not distribute lines to home gardeners or citizens, but there are people out there who have genuine research ability and research questions, and their projects tend to involve extreme environments or the need for unique phenotypes. Fulfilling those requests typically takes much more time than the average researcher's request because of the nature of the target. A lot of these are retired breeders who continue to pursue their interests after retirement. We have one neurosurgeon who has developed a special interest in a nutritional component and wants to find everything that might have this nutritional component. So it's interesting. Could we better leverage the collection? Absolutely. We do not have representation of all the races of maize in our collection. We are not the world source of this. CIMMYT is in Mexico. We need to increase the availability of the material we have so it can be used, not just of the maize pops and inbreds, but of Teosinte and Tripsicum. We need to increase the availability of associated information. No one wants to order 20,517 things to do their research. They want to target it based on the information. So comprehensive characterization is necessary. This is nothing new. And we need to integrate various sources of information to address important questions, which first have to be articulated. So how the collection is leveraged continues to evolve. It's got to meet the production needs and challenges of the future, and we have to have the data to support that. Just last week, I had a visitor from a private sector who says, we are desperate for unique new sources of germplasm. I said, do you want lines that have roots, or do you just want yield and you don't care if they have roots? He says, just put them out there. I'll decide whether to use them. Okay. That makes sense. Our gene bank's focus has to be devoted to the development of high-quality, comprehensive collections and the information, and we will let our research partners do the investigations that contribute to this. And the nature of the collection is what has driven technology development at our station and workflow development. When you have a 20,000 element collection or a 100,000 element collection, it demands tools. So I'd just like to acknowledge the staff of the station, the North Central Regional Planner Induction Station, the support from USDARS, the Hatch Multi-State Project, NC7, our partner institution, Iowa State, the GEM project participants, including our technical steering group, and CINTA and Ed, and the many investigators who invest their energies in understanding the value of these collections. So, thank you.
So we'd like to take any questions now.
There's one.
Thank you, that was very informative. I'm wondering about phenotypic information, and you referred to this. How well are you able to input the phenotypes that you do have into your computer system?
If we have the data, we can do it. How well can we do it? What exactly are you asking me? How much data do we have?
How much backlog data do you have that has not yet been entered?
Usually we're within 6 months of field phenotype data going in. Now, we ask recipients of the germplasm to share characterization data with us and to share research findings. And this is part of our problem in improving these data sets, because it tends to be a one-way street, and we would love to get data sets. Mark does a pretty good job of entering citations as they are published using the collections, but please send us your data. Thank you.
Question?
Can anyone get the collection accessions?
Some, not all of it, but if we want part of it.
Yes.
Freely available.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Subject to your country's import regulations and issuing a phytosanitary certificate, but yes.
Thank you.